ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय verses of chapter 6 from canto 3, creation of the universal form. I just finished chapter 5, and maybe a little really quick summary of chapter 5. Chapter 5 is entitled Vidura's Talks with Maitreya. The dialogue between Vidura and Maitreya spans from the beginning of the third canto, through the fourth canto, through the fifth canto. So, it's a big conversation. Maitreya had just heard Krishna speaking to Uddhava. Because when Krishna spoke Uddhava Gita, Maitreya was right there, also hearing. Before hearing, Maitreya was a very elevated mystic, but not a pure devotee. By the time he heard the whole of Uddhava Gita, he became especially devotionally qualified. So qualified that when Vidura, who was on pilgrimage, you know this from Canto 1, Chapter 13, Vidura had gone on pilgrimage, and he met Maitreya, mentions. So at the beginning of the third canto, the sages say to Sukha, so a couple of cantos ago, you said, Vidura met Maitreya, and he was on pilgrimage. Can you describe his pilgrimage? Where did he go? What were his experiences? And then when he met Maitreya, what was that conversation? It must have been a really good conversation, because Vidura is so elevated, Maitreya is so elevated. Can you narrate what the conversation was? So, Sutta Goswami is answering those questions. But, although he is the speaker, I'm going to skip some things, but Vidura met Maitreya. And he wanted to hear Krishna Katha. So he starts asking a number of questions in relation to Krishna. But one of the things that he specifically asks Maitreya to describe is he who is unborn, who creates the whole cosmic manifestation, and then enters into the cosmic manifestation to perform pastimes, to attract living entities, to return to the spiritual world. Could you describe how he does that? Like, you know, the process of creation. So Maitreya begins describing Sarga, which is the Lord's manifesting of material elements. He does that in quite detail. Then he kind of fast forwards and we're into the Visarga. There's demigods, so there's beings. Brahma has done sub-creation, and with the sub-creation, the principal deities or personalities to rule over the creation, and they're feeling themselves not capable, not qualified. And so they offer prayers And that's the fifth chapter. They're offering prayers for becoming qualified to do what they have to do for their service in the right mood. And with the whole qualification, they describe their disqualification and their dependence upon the Supreme Lord to do things in the proper way. Kindly award us your perfect knowledge and potency so that we can render you service in the different departments of subsequent creation. That's the last verse. And now we're going to begin chapter 6. Maitreya is continuing. The Lord thus heard about the suspension of the progressive creative functions of the universe due to the non-combination of his potencies, such as the Mahatattva. So the unfolding of creation reached it was stuck. Because demigods felt unable to continue without the Lord's empowerment. Short report, there is nothing wanting in the creation of the Lord. All the potencies are there in a dormant state, but unless they are combined by the will of the Lord, nothing can progress. The suspended progressive work of creation can only be revived by the direction of the Lord. Text 2. The Supreme Powerful Lord then simultaneously entered into the 23 elements with the goddess Kali, his external energy, who alone amalgamates all different elements. Normally it's 24. So the one that was eliminated or not listed as the 24th element is Chaita, which means different. This Prabhupada translates it as different things in Sankhya philosophy. Sometimes he translates it as contaminated consciousness. Sometimes he translates it as the sum total of the material, the big warehouse. There's the elements, and then there's the supply of all the elements, the total material ingredients. So 23 is minus that. So the elements have separated, that was already described. Now, to continue the process of creation, the Lord enters within those elements along with his external energy, goddess Kali. Here's the purport. The ingredients of matter are counted as 23. Well, here there's number 24. The total material energy, false ego, five sense objects, sound, touch, form, taste, smell, five gross material elements, earth, water, fire, air, sky, five knowledge acquiring senses, eye, ear, nose, tongue, skin, five working senses, hand, leg, evacuated organ, genitals, speech, and mind. Well, the one that's missing is intelligence. And I'm surprised he didn't put intelligence and left out the total material energy. Let's see if there's an explanation why. All are combined together by the influence of time and are again dissolved in the course of time. Time, therefore, is the energy of the Lord and acts in her own way by the direction of the Lord. This energy is called Kali, not Kala, but Kali, and is represented by the dark, destructive goddess, generally worshipped by persons influenced by the Lord of Darkness or ignorance in material existence. In the Vedic hymn, this process is described as Mula Prakritir Avikritir Mahadaya Mahadadya Prakriti Vikritirya Sapta Sodosh Sho Dashakas Tu Vikaro Na Prakritir Na Vikriti Purushaha. The energy which acts as material nature is a combination of 23 ingredients. It is not the final source of creation. The Lord enters into the elements and applies His energy called Kali. In all other Vedic scriptures, the same principle is accepted in Brahma Samhita in the state of Eko piso rachayatam jagadanta kovatim ko yas chakti rasti jagadanta chaya yadantaha andanta rasta paramara chayanta rastam govindam adipurusham tamaham vajami. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is the original personality Godhead. By his partial plenary expansion, Mahavishnu, He enters into material nature and then into each and every universe as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and then as Sharadakshaya Vishnu into all the elements, including every atom of matter. Such manifestations of cosmic creation are innumerable, both in the universes and in the individual atoms. That's all translation. Next paragraph. Similarly, this is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 10:42. Atava bhutanaitena kim gyatena tavarjana vishtavyaham idam kritsnam ekam sena stito jagat. O Arjuna, there is no necessity of your knowing about my innumerable energies which act in various ways. I enter into the material creation by my partial plenary expansion, Paramatma, or the Super Soul, in all the universes and in all the elements thereof. And thus, the work of creation goes on. Final sentence of the purport. The wonderful activities of material nature are due to Lord Krishna, and thus He is the final cause, or the ultimate cause of all causes. I'll read one more verse. This is a graduate study explanation of the process of creation. Text number 3. Thus, when the personality God had entered into the elements by His energy, all the living entities were enlivened into different activities, just as what is engaged in His work after awakening from sleep. Purport. Every individual soul remains unconscious after the dissolution of the creation and thus enters into the Lord with His material energy. These individual living entities are conditioned souls everlastingly. But in each and every material creation, they are given a chance to liberate themselves and become free souls. They are given a chance to take advantage of the Vedic wisdom and to find out what is their relationship with the Supreme Lord, how they can be liberated, and what the ultimate profit is in such liberation. By properly studying the Vedas, one becomes conscious of his position and takes to transcendental loving service, devotional service, of the Lord and is gradually promoted to the spiritual sky. The individual souls in the material world engage in different activities according to their past unfinished desires. After the dissolution of a particular body, the individual soul forgets everything. But the all-merciful Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart as the witness and super soul, awakens him and reminds him of his past desires, and thus he begins to act accordingly in his next life. This unseen guidance is described as fate. And a sensible man can understand that this continues his material bondage in the three modes of material nature. Paragraph, the unconscious sleeping stage of a living entity, just after the particular, after the partial or total dissolution of the creation, is wrongly accepted as the final stage of life by some less intelligent philosophers. After the dissolution of the partial material body, a living entity remains unconscious for only a few months, and after the total dissolution of the material creation, he remains unconscious for many millions of years. But when the creation is again revived, he is awakened to his work by the Lord. The living entity is eternal, and the wakeful state of his consciousness, manifested by activities, is his natural condition of life. He cannot stop acting while awake, and thus he acts according to his diverse desires. When his desires are trained in the transcendental service of the Lord, his life becomes perfect, and he's promoted to the spiritual sky to enjoy awakened life. We'll probably spend more time about getting free from the material entanglement than specifically commenting on all of this. So let's go back. We have the elements. We have Lord Brahma, who is helping to assemble the elements. We have demigods who are offering prayers to the Supreme Lord, feeling unable to carry forward their work unless the Lord gives his mercy. So he decides to give his mercy, and that's where this begins. Having heard that the creative functions of the universe were in a standstill, in a suspended state, that his potencies, although they were differentiated out of Pradhan, they weren't working concertedly, or they weren't combining according to his plan. And so he entered into the elements as Paramatma. Making it possible for this ongoing process of creation to continue. So what Prabhupada is saying here is he gives these 23 elements, and they're meant to be combined together, but they do so through the time energy. Now I can't offer an explanation for this sentence. This energy, I'll read the two sentences together. Time, therefore, is the energy of the Lord and acts in her own way by the direction of the Lord. This energy is called Kali and is represented by the dark destructive goddess, generally worshipped by persons influenced by the Lord of darkness or ignorance in the material existence. It sounds like he's saying that goddess Kali is the same as his time energy. Sounds like it. But I would be at a loss to explain how the goddess Kali is his time energy. So So don't ask me that question. It sounds like, because the verse is saying that he, the Sanskrit is Kala Sangya, or known as Kala, Kala Sangya, but then he's translated as known as Kali. So somehow he's making this one-to-one correlation between Kala Shakti and the goddess Kali. So we just take out goddess Kali and it's very easy. That is, the Lord, along with his time energy, enlivens the situation where the matter, the material elements are there, such that the demigods and Brahma can do their service. They can amalgamate the elements, they can bring them to the right position so that they're supplying the parts of creation. That's just like the bricks or sand and cement and stuff, that they can be put together properly. He gives three references. Excuse me, he gives three references. One is Vedic hymns, Mula Prakriti, this is how it starts. The energy which acts as material nature. In a combination of 23 ingredients, is not the final source of creation. The Lord enters into the elements and applies his energy. That's natural because where the Lord is, his energy is. He's the Lord of something. He's the Lord of his energies. So wherever he goes, his energies go. And with that is time energy. But time both destroys, that we know from Bhagavad Gita, just time destroys everything. But time allows things to come into being also. Like assembling here in the room. Without time, you can't do that. And then we're present, we're in the room, and then after, we're going to go somewhere. The time enables activity. As well as destroys. So, the main point that Prabhupada wants us to understand is that matter doesn't just do things on its own. Material perspective, modern mechanistic science says precisely that. There's only one thing, and that's matter and the laws that govern matter, and there's not anything else. The impersonalists say something different. There's only one thing, and that's Brahman. There isn't anything else. There is what doesn't exist, and then there's what does exist. And Brahma alone exists. Anyway, the Vaishnava perspective, the Bhagavad perspective, is there's the Lord and his energies. And there's nothing else. There's God, and there's the energies of God, and there's not a third thing. So whatever it is, is either God or his energies. So he has his material elements, he enters in with his own personal energy, his time energy, and then things start to happen. But they don't happen on their own. It's kind of a side discussion, but a college student has been having some, a devotee has been having some email exchange, trying to understand the verses that Krishna says it's very difficult to understand. Action and inaction. You know those verses, right? One of them sees action in inaction and inaction in action as a true knower of things. So the discussion goes into what does the living entity do? There are several verses where it says the living entity does nothing. Everything is being carried out by Prakriti. But then the living entity does something by endeavoring. Because there's five factors of action, and one of them is endeavor. You don't have action without an endeavor. But the living entity is doing nothing. So how to understand all this? And ultimately it's like Krishna's sanctioned, but Krishna's also doing nothing. Right? Krishna creates, but he doesn't do anything. He says that Bhagavad Gita. Although I've done all of so many things, I haven't done anything. It's being carried out by his energy. So everything is being carried out by Krishna's energy. So in one sense, like this, what this purport is describing, matter doesn't act on its own. Behind matter is Krishna. But matter is what's doing everything and causing other people to act. Forcing living entities to, by conditioning, to behave in different ways. For a dog to bark and wag his tail, and for the king that's sitting on the throne to think he's the king. Like Rahugana, thinking I'm the king. And Jadavar saying, you're nonsense. It's a subtle subject matter that can't be understood just by being a college student. You're having some intellect that can't be understood that way. There's this relationship between Krishna and his energy that's inconceivable. Achintya deva tattva. So while Krishna is doing nothing, Krishna does so many things because he's the ultimate cause of all causes. Nothing can happen without Krishna's permitting it to happen. But how does Krishna doesn't go to the office and do a bunch of things, or even stay at home and do a bunch of things? Krishna is engaged in his eternal lila while his energies are doing anything, or his expansions, and the energies of those expansions are permitting anything, and then his energies are doing anything. And then there's this tatastha shakti, living entity, that's also Krishna's energy, but is the non-doer, like Krishna is the non-doer. It's material nature that's doing things. But ultimately it's Krishna doing things, because it's his energy. And the living entity does have a role to play, and it's reduced to how we exercise our free will, and you can put some categories of how we exercise our free will, that is particular desire. Like in the Damodar Lila, Mother Jasoda wants to bind Krishna. But Krishna doesn't want to be bound. He's exhibiting Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes. He's exhibiting his vibhuti shakti, his opulences, that all, no rope can go around his abdomen. More rope still doesn't, small rope still doesn't, more rope still doesn't. His vibhuti shakti. And another is his satya sankalpa shakti. Sankalpa means intention. And satya sankalpa shakti is that which is its truth. When Krishna intends something, it's reality. Just by his intending something, it happens, it's substantial. That's not for, it's the same for us. But Krishna's will is fact. It's like Krishna's opinion is fact. Because it's his opinion, it's fact. So, Mother Yashoda can't find Krishna. But she continues to try to find Krishna. Because she has this motherly love. I have this, my duty. I must. I'm his mother. If I don't teach him a lesson to not steal, what's going to happen? When he grows up, he'll just be a big thief. Because I've been neglecting my motherly duty. I must. So she gets horrible. She's crying. Very determined. Krishna sees her sincerity, her determination, and he allows her to find him. Very nice to meet her. Krishna withdraws his vibhuti shakti into satya sankalpa shakti, and he exhibits his kripa shakti. So things happen or don't happen because of Krishna's potencies. And they're his internal potencies when it's his devotee, and it's his external potency when it's his non-devotee. And through the agency of Krishna's external potency, things happen or don't happen. And behind it is Krishna's will. Or behind it is Krishna. Without his sanction, nothing can happen. He's the ultimate cause. The final cause, he also says. While there's so many wonderful activities of original nature, it's due to Krishna, although he's doing nothing. So when Krishna enters within every atom of matter, he also enters within the heart of every living being and awakens them into activity. And that explanation is given. Somebody's asleep. At night it's just for one night. And between the annihilation of the universe and the next universe, it's a very long time. Between the night of Brahma and the day of Brahma, it's a shorter period of time, a very long time. And during those conditions, the living entity is asleep. So as when one's asleep at night and in the morning is awakened and then remembers, oh, I'm Vishnu Das, I have to go to school, I have to do these and those services, or whatever. As Super Soul is enlivening and giving remembrance, Matak Smitir Jnana, Pohanamsha, to the living entity, what it needs to do. So at this early stage of creation, so also one resumes the activity where he left off in the previous creation, or the previous night of Brahma, or the previous day of one's life. And the source of that awakening is the presence of Super Soul. It's not that when we wake up in the morning we remember all of the past karma that we did since time immemorial. But Super Soul was aware. And so both guna and karma make arrangements for the fulfillment of our past deeds, good and bad and mixed. Going, you know, each day, each moment of each day, unfolding. So, the other part of the purport is Prabhupada's explanation that actually the purpose of the material energy is to provide an opportunity for the living entity to revive this Krishna consciousness. So Krishna is doing both. He's, as Super Soul, reminding us of our previous material desires and the activities that will help fulfill those desires, and gives us intelligence how to try to fulfill those desires, material intelligence. He's also prompting us in a different way how to go back to Godhead, how to come back to Him. And when his desires are trained in the service of the Lord, his life becomes perfect and he's promoted to the spiritual sky to enjoy eternal awakened life. So, choices are there. And teachers and training is required in order to go down the right path. Not just a matter of saying, I don't like this material program anymore, I want the spiritual program. Just change channels. It'd be nice if it was that easy, but it's not that easy. Because there's conditioning tendency. There's a very nice verse in Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text Number 16. I was speaking on that verse this morning. Chindanti Kovidas Tasya. The verse says that when the living entity comes to the stage of Shrotavya Kirtitavyascha Dhyaya Pujasta Nityada, of constantly engaging himself in devotional service because he's very attracted to that activity of hearing and chanting and remembering and worshiping, still there's this residual tendency, something like a bad odor after some bad, spoiled, garbagey food has been cleaned up. There's a lingering tendency for those same activities just due to past contact, material contact. So when Krishna sees that the living entity is strongly desiring, even despite obstacles and despite so many things, he is strongly desiring, then Krishna gives him the sword. And with that sword, he can cut that, even that tendency. It's finished. But that doesn't happen immediately. Tendency will otherwise still linger. Like the deodorizer commercial or something. It's dependent upon Krishna, the action of Krishna's energy to condition, to create, to maintain and to withdraw, to condition the living entity in that whole process, that Krishna's energies are needed. Not just this activation of those energies is needed, it's not just the things start to happen. And then Krishna withdrawing that potency also is needed. What to end, what to dream of. Okay, short class. Any discussion? Something?
Told that the material energy is created so that we can relay our Krishna consciousness. So now that we came in contact with the disciplic system, so what is that serious thing that is required to make it happen completely?
the desire to do so. In Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami poses the question, or Bhaktivinoda Saraswati poses the question, what's the eligibility of a candidate for devotional service? And the same is to begin devotional services, to complete devotional service. And the answer is the desire to do so. And the very elevated stage is an intense desire. He calls it greed. I desire too much. Greed, which in material existence is a bad quality. The spiritual intense desire is a good quality. I mean, properly directed, is a good quality. When it's mature and not simply fanatical, but wisely applied, it's a good quality. I'm just reading this morning the engaging in the process of the hearing and chanting is a byproduct, or as a result of our desire to connect with Krishna. The desire to connect with Krishna is like fire that's stored in wood coming out. So what's needed to get the fire that's stored in wood to come out? It's fire. And then the fire distorted wood will come out. Otherwise it'll just sit there. No fire. Stored fire. But fire in contact with the wood, the fire comes out. So through the contact with one who's carrying bhakti, then one's bhakti comes out. It's there. It's stored. Dormant. And bhakti is a desire to make contact with the Lord. More specifically, desire to hear and chant in the context, in the association of one who has some fire, one who has that strong desire. And then it, as it matures, it's the maturing of the desire to contact Krishna through the means of that he provides, devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting. So as those, that contact with the quality person, the bhakta. A bhakta is one who's carrying bhakti in their heart. So to carry one along is that contact. You need fire. And stand close to fire, you become warm, you become hot. You'll ignite. Anything else? Okay, thank you. See you both. Thank you.